It's time for Declare Your Independence with Ernest Hancock. To be a part of the show, call 1-800-313-9443.
Believe me when I say we have a difficult time ahead of us. But if we are to be prepared for it, we must first shed our fear of it. I stand here without fear because I remember. I remember that I am here not because of the path that lies before me, but because of the path that lies behind me. I remember that for 100 years we have fought these machines. And after a century of war, I remember that which matters most. We are still here! Tonight, let us make them remember. We are not afraid!
Yeah, we're not afraid here in Declare Your Independence. Me, Ernest Hancock, each and every day, Central Time, 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. from Phoenix, Arizona, and beautiful freedomsphoenix.com studio. That's freedoms with an S, phoenix.com, P-H-O-E-N-I-X, phoenix. Yep. You know, it's like Tucson. It's not Tucson, it's T-U-C-S-O-N, Tucson. Yeah, I don't get to see. That's just the way it rolls. You know, I came from Florida. I tell you, man, you want to have some weird Indian names there, man. That, dang. Well, you know, what we've been talking about is, and Labor Day. Labor Day was kind of, you know, the labor for labor and kind of got mixed in with this, the socialist movement of, you know, labor versus and riots and this and that and the government protecting rights of who? You know, I mean, a lot of times, if you go in the history of this, it was kind of an appeasement to labor. You know, okay, we'll give you a labor day and, you know, stop rioting. Because now I'll just give you a real quick deal on this, on my version of this. Because when you run for office, you got to go appear before the labor unions, you know, endorsements. And you don't have to, but I go in and say, yo, what's up? Because, you know, I love people. You know, people good. You know, generally they want to do the right thing. I mean, you know, there's always someone above them pulling strings that don't. But, you know, a lot of people, they want to do what they perceive to be the right thing. And I go and I talk to them and I said, you know, libertarians are labor's, you know, greatest friends. We understand it's your labor. Then we get to negotiate your labor. You can collectively bargain with your labor. But the job doesn't belong to you. It belongs to the guy that created it. It belongs to the man that made the business. You know, he can do what he wants with that. You know, I don't want you anymore. Your skills aren't enough. You're getting lazy or whatever. I'll get this other guy come in. I got plenty of people that want to do this job. They come in. No. We strike and they use force. They initiate force at, you know, lines and they bust people's cars and you can't take my job and whatever. So who's the criminal here? Well, then they want laws to make them bargain with them, to make them, they can't have, it's a closed shop. You have different state laws, like Arizona is a right-to-work state. You know, you don't have to be in a union to work someplace. You can't prevent. I mean, you see, from a libertarian perspective, and you look at this kind of labor union thing, of course you have the right to strike. Of course you have a right to collectively bargain and contract. Of course you have. But you can't use the force of government as someone that actually, it's their job in their business, and say they have to give it to you. They have to set the conditions under which they have to. They can't lie. They can't say it's a safe work environment and come in here and all of a sudden they're poisoning and polluting you and won't pay you your full pay. I mean, that's just that's force or fraud. I do not advocate the initiation of force or fraud for political, social, or economic gain. That's what this is about. It's called telling the truth. As long as you tell the truth, fine. You know, you want to, you know, be a butthead? Go. Well, what would happen? You'd have all these people would use force, and then eventually from political persuasion and rioting and whatever would get the government to take their side and violating the rights of the employer. Going down dark side. Anyway, so that's my Labor Day thing. When we come back, I want to go ahead and finish on this, is that the media is not done on this. And they're, you know, been bugging me to go on a bunch of different stuff. I'm going to do Air America because I know these guys. I know they're going to, you know, take their best swipe at me and so on. But, you know, the one thing that I want to make very clear to them is that what happened to the anti-war movement? You got millions of people dying, and you come up and try and take the moral high ground and say, well, we need to, you know, have health care for people so they don't die. And I'm going, wait, time out. You're bombing the living crap out of these people over here. We have our own people dying. Where's your moral high ground? What happened? Where did the anti-war movement go? We'll talk about more when we come back here on Declare Your Independence with me, Ernest Hancock.
It's time to declare your independence with Ernest Hancock. To be a part of the show, call 1-800-313-9443. And now, live from the studios of Freedom's Phoenix, Ernest Hancock.
Welcome back to Declare Your Independence. Me, Ernest Hancock, and in studio I brought in Gene and Buck. They came down here, you know, surprise, it's Labor Day. They're off, so you know they're down here a lot over the months that we've had the studio, and even before when we were doing the revolution. Now Gene cannot pass a corner without standing with a sign. I mean, she is. You know, this is therapy for her. So you know what happens is that you know there is a passion for them just seeking the truth. So you know, let me ask you guys. You know, why did you guys come down today?
Well, good morning, Ernie. Good morning, Donna. We came down expecting a couple other people to be here that you're going to conduct an interview with, and nobody's here. So now I'm sitting in front of the microphone.
Okay, who was it you were thinking of be here?
The editor of New Times and Pastor Anderson.
And, you know, now this was the plan. This was the plan. What we were going to do is I talked to Pastor Anderson and Chris, you know, the black man that had the AR-15, no Chris, good guy, said, you know, you guys come in. And New Times guy, there's this one, you know, he's a liberal kind of, you know, he's not the best writer in the world, but, you know, he's just an inflammatory, he's a high school newspaper gossip columnist, you know, that kind of goes to different things and amps it up. And he'll go, yeah, they're always saying about, you know, name calling everybody Nazis and Nazi this and Nazi that. And then he'll go use 15 zillion adjectives himself on telling you what kind of person you are because you said it. But, you know, so he's, yeah, whatever, he's entertaining. He's published in New Times and they're, you know, kind of the progressive side of news coverage here. It's a weekly. And so he's really on his blog and so on. He's just got this Pastor Anderson thing, man. He's going on. Well, he talked about Leonard Clark going and doing this love protest thing in front of the church. And I know Leonard, and I said, Leonard, you know, come on down, man. I'm with you, brother. You know, it's all about, you know, give love a chance. You know, all we need is love. So come on. He goes, yeah, I'll come down. You know, that'd be cool. We'll talk about it. Then somebody got to him, and I think it was, you know, the guy from the New Times, because I invited him too. I wanted all four of them. We're going, you know, everybody gets a gun. No. I go, everybody come in. We'll have a good old time. Well, you know, Leonard knows me. I've known him for years. So he's, yeah, I'll be down there. And then it got to, he goes, I don't know, man. We're worried that, you know, who's we? You know, so I'm like, okay, you know, there's something going on there. So he invited me to go on Jeff Ferris's show with him, you know, kind of more he thought would be, you know, better ground. Because Leonard and I have had long conversations about philosophical stuff and everything. So I think he thought he might need some help, you know, with Jeff Ferris, which did guest hosted for Randy Rhodes from this studio right here where I'm sitting for 6 hours, 2 days, a couple weeks ago when he filled in for Randy Rhodes and she's on vacation. So he came in, used the studio, no big deal. I don't even care what commie puke stuff he was saying, whatever, that's his thing. You know, so we had him on the show like a few days before I left for vacation, and we talked and so on, because I can talk to these guys. You know, I just don't, they can believe whatever they want. I just want them to understand why I believe. I'm not trying to change your mind. I just want them to understand why. They'll come around as events and time goes, but they get so invested in this system. And that's one thing where, like Brad Friedman, that's doing the Mike Malloy show with me on Thursday, now it's a progressive, you know, of course he's going to, you know, play to his audience. Of course he's going to come after me and do whatever. We can still be friends, but, you know, as long as I get to make my points, you know, that's fine. I'm good. It's all about the injection of the libertarian infection into the bone marrow of American discourse, for which there is no cure. And if I can use these big dramatic things, boom, and put an idea in there, it's an infection, and it can't get away from it because you're dealing from truth. So what happened is I wanted all four. I mean, everybody come in. Now, let's do it up. Well, they don't want to do that. A lot of times they just, you know, they either want it to go away or they want to keep it segmented. They want to keep it the us versus them thing. They don't want to find a common ground. They don't want to stop this. They want to amp it up. They've got more attention. You know, they call them, his nom de plume on the New Times, his name is Stephen Lemons, and he goes by Feathered Bastard, okay? You know, or, you know, Fat Scales or whatever, you know. So, I you know, the thing is that he is, this is the greatest thing ever happened. happened to him. How he's writing it. He goes and sits in a sermon last week. Yeah, and they're fire and brimstone and so on. So this will keep getting amped up. And then they look at me and say, well, you're the one that's going to cause the violence. And stuff. I'm like, really? I'm trying to prevent it. Because I know what's coming. They're going to do the same thing. Tuesday afternoon, once again, I'll tell you this. I was invited for coffee to meet with the Confrontation Prevention Squad guy of the Phoenix Police Department. They want to talk to me again. And I'm like, yeah, cool. We'll talk. But what they don't know, and they probably won't listen to the show. And what they don't know is there's some other stuff going on, totally unrelated, that is philosophical. There's some... Yeah, there's another situation coming up that has nothing to do with any of this. It has to do with, you know, the role of government and the Phoenix Police Department and how we're going to, you know, really make some hay on some issues that need to be discussed. And there's going to be a line. You know, there's going to be good guys on this side and good and bad guys on this side. Which side is the Phoenix Police? At what level in the Phoenix Police are they going to be the good guys? Because they worked with us on this thing. We made them out to be the good guys. They're very happy to work with us. They're happy with what we did. They protected our rights. So as payback, we're going to try and give them another opportunity to be the good guys. But the political pressure is so heavy against this issue that's coming up, and I won't be able to tell you until Wednesday, but I'm telling you, it is going to be international coverage. Well, at least they'll make it outside the valley. But the thing is that, now I'm pretty sure this is going to be huge. This is going to be huge, but it's going to start with, it'll start on the internet. We'll make sure, and it goes, it'll hit mainstream, and it's probably going to, there's already television and mainstream papers lined up on this story. So you pay attention. I wish I could tell you more. I mean, I'm just, you know, you're lucky I'm telling you as much as I am. But the thing is that when I meet with these guys, they think they're going to talk about whatever the heck they want to talk about. Fine. Now, a little piddly and whatever, and so we're filling in our schedule to make us, we earn our job. But there's so much more going on because it is a battle for your mind. It's a perspective that you have on what the proper role of government is, because they'll tell you what it is. Yeah, but what about in society when things we need to have and everything that they say that they use to justify their existence, they don't do that either. You know, they don't. It's a lie. It's all a lie. So, you know, one thing that I want to share with you is my good relationship and good friends, Ed and Buck, that have been in this battle with us for a long time. They have been fighting this even way before I was politically aware. You know, so a good perspective, and in just a couple of minutes, you know, when the Vietnam thing was going on, I mean, are you seeing parallels in the mindset, the battles here?
There's all kinds of parallels, Ernie. And at the end of the Vietnam War, we thought we'd won. So we kind of relaxed what we were doing, let our guard down, and everybody else in the country did also. Government did not. Government kept going with its original plan. It got this far before people started paying attention again. Now, one of the things that helped me out was when we moved to Texas and I discovered Ron Paul. Well, this was 20 years ago or so, and I started reading some of what he was doing reading about what he was doing in Washington, D.C., and it started clicking again. And when the Ron Paul movement started a couple of years ago, I figured, well, this is it. This is time. We got to do it again. Even if I can't walk. So here we go.
Man, what about you, Gene? I mean, you guys met at a young age, and you've been in this together for a long time.
Well, Ron Paul is my hero. I'm a Phoenix revolutionary and proud of it.
Yeah, don't grab the microphone. I can hear the rustling. She's Phil Donahue. So the thing is that, you know, why? I mean, what was your exposure first to get involved in this thing? I mean, I remember you from early on, just, Gene, you know, because you're like a high-strung poodle, man. Just boing, 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 always something you got to do and working hard. And glad Gene was there, work got done, you know. So I want to make sure, you know, they got to tell something.
Well, I love our country, and I still think it's worth saving. My old story is that I would be at home with the doors locked and be afraid and depressed. And I thought, I've got to get out and do something to help save our country. So I'm proud to say I've been called the Street Action Queen here in Phoenix. As Bernie says, stand on the corner with signs and try to free minds and wake people up.
And why? What do you care? Yeah, that's a good question. See, the motivation a lot of times, you know, for me, I've come to realize for me to be free, I got to advocate it for everybody. You know, I mean, I just, you know, do I really care if my neighbor's free and so on? Well, it's in my self-interest, yeah. I'd prefer that they be. How much work am I going to do to better their lifestyle before I would my own children? Or heck, even my own dog. I mean, you know, I got my own things to worry about. But what if you come to the realization that it's in my self-interest to advocate for freedom for everyone because I'm a selfish son of a bitch that wants it for me? Am I allowed to get it for me? You know, I vote me, you know, and my family.
Well, we also have a son, and we're trying to make things better for him in the future also.
Yeah, you know, and I tell you, having kids will motivate you. You know, my son, they came over. They're over on the weekends. They just had their baby. Have you seen the baby yet?
I've seen the pictures, yes.
Yeah, no, you got to go see the baby. This is cool, being grandparents. Well, what happened was my son, all of a sudden, all the stuff that we, you know, you're never a prophet in your own land, you know. I mean, you know, parents, what do you know? All of a sudden, we're getting really smart. I told you, this. I go, you need to, whatever, man, don't do it. You're going to have a colicky, gassy babe. Go ahead. You know, your pain is my reward. I didn't mean that. Well, hardly. But the thing is that, you know, you can see this stuff happening, and all of a sudden you start to see this investment that you have in freedom expands. That's why we did the It's Not My Debt, you know, these children. We did a big billboard campaign and so on. You can't put tens of thousands of dollars more obligation on these kids and have them all of a sudden somehow obligated for it. How did that happen? You know, how did that happen that they were obligated to this debt? By being born? You're born into slavery? I don't think so, and I don't think they do either. We'll be right back.
There are those that just want to be left alone, and those that just won't leave them alone. Which one are you? The Ernest Hancock Show.
Lunatic Fringe, I know you're in here. Yeah, good choice, Don. So then we have the, you know, and we'll get her involved in this too, because we're all friends. You know, that's one thing when I did CNN, they go, yeah, well, you guys were like, you know, laughing and doing, I'm going, yeah, we're all friends. If you're not having fun advocating for freedom, you're doing it wrong, man. You know, they didn't like that. But the one thing that has been a motivation for a lot of us, and we all motivate each other. You know, everybody has their own amp it up depending on what it is. If it's a street action, you're out holding up signs and so on, and Gene keeps everybody up. Then you have, you know what's interesting about, you got, I'm going to get you on record on this one. One trait that Gene has is she'll come in and she'll be all fiery and going, everybody's all having a good time, and right at the peak of people just running, turn around and Gene's gone. She just disappears. You know, this is how she, when she leaves something, she hates saying goodbye at parties or whatever, and she's just gone. What's up with that?
Well, it always ends up that when you make a big production on leaving, then you have to come back and, oh, damn, I forgot my purse or something. You know what I'm saying? And it's the old quit while you're ahead type thing, too.
So, yeah, that's what they, Gene, I'm going, why did you get mad? Are you always in a fight with somebody or something? What's happened? No, she just, when it's just time for her to go, everybody's having a good time, it's the peak of the thing. She's like, okay, I did my bit, I'm gone. Boom, gone. Now, that's, you know, it's a good thing sometimes. But, you know, I might use that someday, but I don't think I'd get away with it. And then, you know, and Buck works for a major airline. You know, here at Sky Harbor, you know, so, yeah, they're all clean cut and Americans, they're camouflaged into urban society, you know, kind of, you know, because they like to do testing over there. So, you know, so the thing is that, you know, these guys, you know, that's, you know, 40 years ago, they're in with the young people that are now. You have to understand these young people really identify with Buck and Gene because man, they out-hippied them big time. You know, these guys were in the anti-war movement way back then. They saw this cycle back in one of its early versions. I come in the late 80s, and then I've seen at least two, three cycles of the same stuff. Wars, the same excuses, the outside and internal threats, the advocacy for new laws and powers of administrations to be able to control people. And so, I mean, just Donna and I have seen a couple of Donna. I mean, have we seen the revolution, you know, cycle going on for a while?
I can't hear you in here, but I assume you're probably talking about why I got into this.
Oh, you're not. You don't have the speakers on?
No, I don't.
Oh, because you gave her your headphones?
Right, but I got into it for the same reason, for the kids. I mean, I really did do it for the children, and I guess you just can never stop because you don't want freedom to die for any generation.
Yeah, you know, that's one thing that you just got to keep the remnant alive. That's one thing Dr. Paul talked a lot about, was the remnant. You know, and what is the remnant? What is he talking about? It's a biblical reference in Isaiah, kind of, you know, that, you know, you preach for the remnant, you know, the people that are left, because you're going to need that core when everything falls apart, which it always does. When it does, you got to have some kind of a base philosophical understanding, which is why we also do this sharing with the people that normally you would think would be our enemies on the left and the right. They're not our enemies. They just don't know. So we're like, look, we're not going to fight you. I'm not going to try and change your mind now. I just want you to understand, you know, why we do it, because you're going to come to the conclusion. You're going to go, oh, I didn't know. I did not know that. You know, and then when they do, they got to make a decision. But a lot of the people that are advocating for continuing what's going on are selected for that very job of keeping on this collectivist central plan for you. And there is no central plan even for freedom. Freedom is about just leaving you alone as long as you're not bothering anybody else. And that's it. That's the only purpose government has. So this is, what do you think the future is? I mean, what are you preparing for? I know that you guys have kind of, you know, we're making sure we got enough toilet paper.
Well, more than toilet paper. You got to have something put in before you get it out. So we got all kinds of food, a few guns, a little bit of ammunition, got some gasoline storage. And we're living in town, so we are really wondering about the water. And what's going to happen with that? So that's the big question mark. Everything else, I think we've got enough for a couple of months.
You know, a lot of people, they have swimming pools. You know, that helps a lot. So Donna and I, what we did is Donna went on Craigslist and found this big 5,000-gallon pool with a filter and all that kind of stuff for $60.
All right.
You know, we put that bad boy up. Oh, and I get to swim in it, too. You know, so I'm like, okay, cool.
No.
So this worked out, you know, but and you get the gravity feed filtration system and so on, and that was pretty expensive. That was $300-$400, you know. But the thing is that I'm going, you know, it's a good idea for us to have water in Phoenix, flipping Arizona. I can tell you that. So I'm going, yeah, we're worried, but when it happens, it won't happen all at once, but it will happen overnight. And I say that, and a lot of people don't know what I mean. I'm going, look, you're going to see the signs. I mean, you see the signs. You know, they're coming as, you know, clear as day, but you don't know when the switch is flipped. You know, when is that? Mm-hmm. And there'll be one morning you wake up and, oh, my goodness, there it is. And you started to see it happen with gold and silver just in the last couple of weeks. You know, we had these silver medallions, Freedom's Phoenix silver medallions, and all of a sudden one of the friends came in and bought 300 of them. He goes, I just want them, even though, you know, it kind of helped us out because it's not at the cheapest rate. You know, there's a little premium on it. And what happened is all of a sudden it shot up $2. And I'm going, oh, yeah, who's doing who a favor, you know? So, hey, you win, Eric. Yeah. But the thing is that, you know, we're all here just having fun advocating for more freedom. You know, maybe you should do the same. Makes you a lot happier. We'll be right back on Declare Your Independence.
It's time for Declare Your Independence with Ernest Hancock. To be a part of the show, call 1-800-313-9443.
Yeah, we want to change the world here and declare your independence. Me, Ernest Hancock, and I want to, you know, share something with you. You know, Buck and Gene, I saw it up on Freedom's Phoenix, and we have this one logo. It's like 1984. We're behind schedule. So there was an NPR. It was called Guns and Butter, Dress Rehearsal for Debt Peonage. You know, so I saw it. I didn't listen to it. And how it says here, with economist Dr. Michael Hudson on why the banks are returning the bailout money, bank fees and penalties, banks prefer default to foreclosure, debt as wealth, Obama's financial regulatory reform proposal, and its six major flaws, the deregulation by centralization ploy, failure to reform the economy will lead to debt peonage, you know, be peons. And I'm going, okay, so this, they're getting ready to tell me back. Well, tell me on air. Don't you love the people out there too? So we'll go ahead and tell me, you listened to that. How long was that? What was it about that got you guys so excited?
Well, it's about an hour long, and it's an interview between the reporter from NPR and Dr. Hudson. And he explains everything that Dr. Paul does, but he's coming from a little bit different angle. He's an economist primarily.
Okay, it's National Public Radio.
Correct, from, of all places, Berkeley.
And what's he saying? You know, give me the spiel, man.
He's explaining how they have passed laws that allow what's going on in this country economically, banks controlling everything and everybody, to happen. And he's also explaining how these things have been happening in other countries. And through these laws, they get people committed to paying the bills that the bankers and the manufacturers come up with. And two of the countries that he's specifically concerned with are Latvia and Iceland. And he's saying that you have to look at what's going on in both of those countries to see what's going to be coming down the pike for America.
Well, I remember both those countries, they overnight went broke. I mean, they had all their investments in, you know, subprime kind of crap and everything. Somebody tricked their one guy and gave him golf games and hookers or something. They signed it over and boom, it's gone.
Well, what they gave him was all of the hydroelectric power that Iceland could produce for the next 75 years. They had Iceland build all these dams across all their rivers, which meant, of course, they lost all their growth area. The people that are putting up the power stations have been financed by the IMF. Iceland was supposed to get a share of the profits, but because of the way the contracts were worded, they're paying the IMF all of the money that the power stations make. There are no profits for Iceland. It's going down the tubes.
All right. There was a guy named, what was his name? John somebody. And he wrote a book called The Confessions of an Economic Hitman. I read the book, and we had him on as a guest and so on. And, you know, what percentage of accuracy it was, everything didn't really matter. This is the point. He was representative of these think tanks, you know, like you have RAND and all this kind of stuff, and they go out and do, and they represent American business, which you might as well say, you know, the American CIA, American government, American military, America. Now, this is you got United States of America, and you got Americans. Yeah, you got, but this is America. You know, America. Yeah, well, America, we're going to go out and be Americans.
Okay? With a K.
With a K. So they go out, and they go to these small countries, and it's like Saudi Arabia when they got, you know, goats eating the garbage. You know, they got nomadic tribes in Middle East going around in the 50s and doing this and that, and they come up and they say, you know what? Let me tell you how our oil is going to get underneath your sand. Let me tell you how that's going to happen. We're going to contract it away. Now, we're going to build airports. We're going to do all this stuff. We're going to indebt you with a debt that you're never going to be able to repay. But you can repay it with your resources. You can repay it with your, you know, hydroelectric power. You can repay it with your, you know, whatever this infrastructure and make Bechtel and Halliburton and KBR. Everybody's going to make all kinds of money, and you're going to be good, and we're going to set you up. You'll never be poor. And your people, and you just do what we do and enslave them and taxpayer, and we get the money and whatever, and now we own all your Amazon rainforest. I mean, you know, this is how this happens. So as an economic hitman, he was going out and showing how this is done. You go into a country and you'll say, like, Venezuela. Now, that's why Steven Lemon, man, he's all over, you know, Chavez. You know, he loves Chavez because he's a progressive, liberal, left kind of thing anyway. But the real draw to Hugo Chavez is not his political philosophy as much as it is philosophy is, you know, American kiss my butt. Okay, that's where he gets a lot of his support, is for them not to be enslaved by, you know, the bankers. you know, just be enslaved by the devil they know. So, you know, I'm just like, not that he's any good guy. But the point is that they come in and they say, let me explain it to you, boy. This is how we're going to take over your country, your financing. We're going to, you know, rape and pillage the resources of your little corner of the world. If they say no, they go, nah, we're not into it, man. We're good. We just want, we like our dirt roads. We like our dirt paths. We like walking barefoot in the jungle. You know, that's our thing. It's all good. You know, we're one with nature, and we don't need you, and have a nice, yes, but you need to have and what reform and no poverty and bright colored polo shirts from Walmart. Okay. So and that's amazing. You go down there and you see all, wow, the Walmart open up down in the jungle or something. So anyway, so you sit there and you go, they say, no, we're not playing. Here comes the military. There's some terrorist organ philosophical go get that's been going on for a long time, certainly since World War II. Heck, it was going on British Empire since forever. You know, like there was a different, you know, we're just subsidiary of them anyway. But the thing is that, so you come in and you go, all right, what do you do about this? Well, he writes this book and says, look, when I fail, there's, you know, you just take out the leader. You know what happened in Iran? Why do you think they're so mad at us? In the 50s, you know, even Dr. Paul will talk about this. They didn't forget the history. The United States government came in and assassinated one of their guys. You know, put in another puppet government, and that's how we got the Shah of Iran. What, you think they forgot? And you think they don't see us doing the same thing all over the world? It's just rhetoric. All this stuff is not so much lies to the rest of the world that they believe it. It's for you. It's you. It's you. You're the ones that are allowing this to happen. Oh, my goodness. There's a guy that's got a headdress on, and he's a different color and a different religion. You know, that we need to go over to his place and kill him. Because they said, in the name of, fill in the blank. They'll just make up crap. You know, this has been going on forever. The Confessions of an Economic Hitman. You know, that's a really, and you'll see. But now, you know, it's not third little countries anymore. They already got to get out of that. You know, now you have pensions and built up big giant buckets of money that these collectivist laws and mentalities for the past three, four decades have really amped up in the last couple of decades. Well, they will use social and economic engineering to get as much money from everybody and promise them health care or, you know, cradle to grave and 4 weeks of vacation and mandatory paternal, maternal leave, you know, whatever excuse that they can do to accumulate this money and then they steal it. Everybody all in? Got all your chips on the table? It's ours now. Are you going to do it again? Okay, we'll take that too. You know, and they did to the point some of these entire nations totally bankrupt. Now, what happens if they say, nah, we're good. We changed our mind. We nationalized it. You know, bite me. We're going to take over the dam. We're going to take over your oil fields. Kind of like a Hugo Chavez thing. So what are they going to do? They're going to want to take out the leader in Iceland? Well, but they're really white. How's that going to work, you know? Do you see how this works? It's just a game, and it's all based on a philosophy. It's based on you're allowing other people to socially and economically engineer you and to use your money to do it to other people in far-off lands. And as the internet and the communication between these young people start to get stronger and more educated, they see this. And they're just like, you know what? How about we not play? Oh, you're not allowed to do that. So then you get, you know, when you have a black man shows up with a AR-15 and says, you keep plundering my generation, sooner or later there will be resistance. You think they can let that stand? Heck no. They will look for any and everything they can to demonize this message and turn it into the hate speech of Pastor Anderson, which had nothing to do with that. But, man, they just walked right into it. And I sit there and going, hey, you know, whatever. So what does, you know, Freedom's Phoenix have? What's my advocacy? Everybody, we just tell the news. We tell everybody does everything because what I wanted was to make sure that people knew that they were redoing the same rhetoric for the same reasons and it wasn't the same kind of people. It was the same people. So I'm going, you know, I already know where this is going. So we'll keep lines open of communication with law enforcement. I know Sheriff Arpaio, and he's got his own problems, you know. I know the Phoenix Police Department, they definitely got their own problems. But we work, yeah, you know where we're standing. You know why we're doing this. We want violent revolution. We're going to be taking out law enforcement and, you know, and whatever and violence. And no, because I know that's what they want. You know, I'm not going to give them what they want. You know, you got to take at least a few lashes. You have them kicking in your door at least once. You know, because I'm a victim. You know, oh, look what he did to me. You know, I mean, I'll take the first hit. You know, I'll take some cuts. I'll take some bruises. But I am in a very different position than most people because I have been doing this for years. I got thousands of radio shows and thousands of people that know all the hundreds of things that we've done, exactly why, exactly how, exactly for what result. And then, but there's some short-term people that don't like the part, you know, the political parties or guys running for office or Libertarian Party, you know, like, you know, you're being controversial, and you know, the country club Libertarians are, you know, heavens to Murgatroyd, I'm all for Klefty. I mean, I'm going, oh, please. Do you think this battle is going to be won at some ballot box counted by a government on their computers? Man, you haven't been paying attention very well. That, you know, and so I'm going, you know, I'm just, I understand. And when you deal with people like Gene and Buck, that have been through this, I mean, intimately involved in this from Vietnam, and come in, oh, yeah, and you guys are good-looking at your age, too. I mean, it makes, I mean, I know you start adding up the numbers, but you start adding up the numbers, you know, but they're good-looking and good shape, riding motorcycles and everything. You guys are hip, man. You know, all the kids around here love you. They hate when we call them kids, too. They're in their 20s. Hey, we're adults. I'm going, man, not to me, you're not. but they're good guys. They're adults.
It's kind of an inspiration because if they see Buck and I doing this stuff, it's like, damn, you know, if they've got the energy, if they've got the drive, if they've got the motivation, you know, what's my excuse?
So, that's absolutely right. Yeah? You know, I mean, Gene, I know you've been at times and you're over at Tom's house making 300 signs in one night.
Yeah.
You know, just sitting there plowing. You know, and that's another thing. They have a new sign campaign. You know what the sign campaign is? They're starting to put the signs up.
Wait for it.
Vaccines equal poison. You know, they already start getting YouTubes. Police are pulling. Yeah, yeah. They're getting ready to put one up. You know, and they see the cops over there watching. They're waiting for them to attach it to the fence. So they're sitting there. No, they're just holding it. You know, at like 1 a.m. or something. So they're sitting there in the corner holding it, and they finally come over and they go, "Hey, you know, you gonna put that?" And they go, "No, we're just standing here holding it. We're just protesting. We're legal. It's all good. Now we know you were gonna put that. Well, you know, yeah, prove it. You know." So they go, well, we can get you. And then they're on videotape. So the police, I didn't watch. They were telling me what happened. And you can go watch it on 4409 stuff. And they were saying, well, you know, we can charge you. We'll make up something. They actually say this stuff. And I'm going, you know, just don't say stupid stuff like that, law enforcement. Well, you know, everybody's got a cell phone video. You know, it's just they can't get away with this stuff anymore. Oh, that's a good thing to ask you guys. They were able to get away with a lot of that stuff in your day, back when you were younger. I mean, there weren't the video cameras. Everybody and their grandma had a cell phone.
Well, if you remember, people were getting beat with batons back then. And there wasn't much you could do about it. You were actually putting yourself on the line when you got out there in front of a line of police.
Yeah, here these guys are going, oh, we're out. And you're going, yeah. Yeah, yeah, when we came back from protest, there was blood and stitches. You know, Gene, what's the flavor you see of this revolution compared to back then? Is it better, worse, more serious, more lighthearted? I mean, what's the difference comparison?
Think about it.
I don't see anywhere near as many people now as there were back then. And I do wonder, you know, where is everybody? What is everybody thinking? Am I way out on a limb? I don't think so. But
you know,
I keep wondering where it all is.
I saw the transition from 19. I really started going to different meetings and seeing people and having, you know, the Arizona Breakfast Club. You know, that was a big thing. And they were part of from back in the 50s, you know, after World War II and so on, this freedom, God, country, family thing that built up. And yeah. And what happened is I saw the transition from about 1993 to 96, right in there. You could see what happened. What it used to be is if you didn't go to the Breakfast Club, you didn't hear any of this stuff. You know, talk radio wasn't really, you know, in it, you know, communicate. They had control on talk radio. You know, it was kind of Rush Limbaugh came out and showed the power of talk radio. And they go, half my brain tied behind my back, that's to keep it fair. And I go, yeah, you untie the other half, you'd be libertarian, you know. So what happened was that they saw that communicating with the people directly had a big impact. It always did when it used to be the big radio stations out of Chicago and the pastor would have 40 million listeners and they're going all freaked out and whatever. And now it's Howard Stern, you know. So it was just – I could see that starting to happen. Then it was the fax trees. They would communicate with – you know, they mail and postcards and all that kind of stuff. But then it was fax trees. We even did it. In 94, we would send a fax. you know, to one guy would have it, and he would send it out to, you know, 10 different people that had 200 in their database, and then that would get sent out to all these faxes everywhere, and you'd get, you know, information that way. So you kind of had little cells going there. Then the internet started to hit, and they had a thing called Paul Revere Net here at Arizona, and it was like a bulletin board. You would send, you know, it's kind of like a fax tree thing. You would send it up to the bulletin board. People would dial into that modem, and then it would download all the stuff on the computer. So we saw the use of computers back early on, before it ever hit what it is now. This World Wide Web thing wasn't even, you know, a twinkle in our eye. So it was just an email trees. Well, then that started to happen. Then it started, and I saw when it became very clear that you could get all this information, you could share entire files of all kinds of stuff, even pictures. You know, which was, that was a whole other thing. You know, pictures take forever to download. Oh, my goodness, you're definitely not doing, you know, 44, 5K modem video. That wasn't going to happen, you know. So we were like, as libertarians, we understood, when they started doing video, then it was all over. 2005, we started Freedom's Phoenix. We had that concept already in our heads from our experiences in the mid-90s. So the reason that you don't see, because I remember going to, you know, these Patriot-type love-ins, teach-ins, whatever. You know, they're doing these things, these presentations, different people would come and speak. And you'd like to hear one or two out of the five of them. And then we did start doing the Freedom Summit in 2001, and we had great speakers. Like, we got Dr. Paul coming first weekend in December in Phoenix, Thomas Wood, and Judge Buttrick, and Adam Kokesh, and Charles Goyette, and John Taylor Gatto, and I mean, you know, a whole bunch of people. And then, of course, Gina Buck will be there. And then so we started doing this. What happened was, you would have these big events where you have 700-800 people show up, but a couple of years later, they didn't have to, because they got all the same information on the internet. And it was a little bit more anonymous. They didn't have all this getting your license plate taken down and all the other stuff that was going on with it and the government oppression. They drove it underground. You know, this is what's happening. It didn't go away, Ed and Buck. I mean, Buck and Gene. It didn't go away. It's still alive. You just don't see it as much.
Freedom's the answer. What's the question? You're listening to Ernest Hancock.
Constant sorrow. Yeah, it's bad, man. It's so bad. But you know what? It's always good when you got friends to share it with. You know, and I tell you, you know, we feel a lot better because we're getting ready. I mean, we knew what was coming. You know, we're all like, you know, getting our chickens, you know, and growing our gardens and learning, you know, different things with each other. And one person buys a grinder to this and one person does it that. You know, we're not having to all live together on the commune. You know, we just know better, helping each other out, because we know what's going to happen. It's going to get bad. It's going to get real bad. And one thing we were talking about is, you know, where's all the crowds? Where'd everybody go? What happened? You know, but I tell you, before the war started in the spring of 2003, there were more people in the streets protesting us going around the world into Iraq than there were during the height of the Vietnam War. It was huge. And the thing is that, you know, they didn't want you to know that. You know, they didn't want you to know that people just on their own were doing this. Oh, and you went to the... Yeah, you went to the anti-war movement. That's right, Patriot Park back there when I first did my radio show and so on from there. You know, so what do you think? Where are the people?
Well, I was going to go down a different track and say that I was at the Scottsdale demos for anti-Obama healthcare. And I was amazed at how many people were at that one. People were actually coming out of the woodwork for that. And,
you know, what's amazing to me are these Tea Party things and so on. It's a Republican thing.
Oh, yeah.
You know, it's just, you know, it's AstroTurf. You know, these people don't do anything. They're coming out and saying, oh, we don't want this, you know, socialism, but, you know, fascism, okay. You know, we'll get a Republican in there so we can go beat them up. And I tell you what's going to happen. You're going to have a health care reform de la something. It's going to be a new line on your paycheck. They are going to pass something. It is going to be a new bucket of money they're going to rip us off with. I guarantee it. This, you think they're not going to pass up this opportunity? It's all the controversy, blah, 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 new bucket of money. We're going down.
Well, I don't know. The Clintons tried to pull it off when they were in office, and it didn't work.
Really? And Trent Franks is the final casting vote for a prescription program that they got? And that was gazillions of dollars, and that was happening under Bush? Mm-hmm. I mean, it's all a continuation. It just keeps going. They'll build up a constituency for it. And, oh, we got to, and they do. You know, there's more increases on, they do these health care accounts. Oh, you got to have health care accounts. Now, we'll let you go ahead and tax-free some of this big, giant bucket of money we're going to create. And you can put it over here in, the stock market. Oh, I'm sorry. It's gone now. I'm so sorry. Thanks for playing. I mean, you know, this is going, you're being programmed. And you're being abused. You're being enslaved. And you're being robbed. And you're allowing it to happen. Stop. Freedom's the answer. What's the question? You can't go. Later this week, you know, starting tomorrow, certainly Wednesday, I'll be able to release a lot more information about a lot of the projects that we have coming. And it's going to be big. And it's going to be, you know, it may not be as big a deal to some, but it certainly is to us because it's why we do this. What is the proper role of government? And we are really going after the lies. Uncovering the secrets, exposing the lies. Everything that we do, everything that we've done, has all, it's like on the back of the business card, it has revolution. We know the truth. And that really nuts some people up. Oh, truth? You the truth? What's the truth? The truth is subjective. The truth is what CNN and Fox tell me. The truth is, I mean, you know, so I'm going, whoa. So you get to talk about what is the truth. Let me tell you what the truth is. There are those that want to be left alone. And there are those that won't leave them alone. What's the proper role of government? They sure as heck shouldn't be the guys that won't leave me alone. You know, they try and make it more complicated than that, and it's not. And this week, we're going to make that very, very clear. Enjoy the rest of your day. You guys have fun. It's Labor Day, which means no labor. I'm a non-labor guy today. I'm not doing a bit of it right after this. You guys enjoy your day.